Hello, my friends. Welcome back into the Neon Gutter. My name is Bert Cohen. On this podcast, we're taking you back in time to the Las Vegas of the 1980s and 90s to introduce you to a cast of characters who combined being aspiring comedians with their love of being extremely cheap to turn it into a small industry. Last time on the show, we discussed a bizarre, long-gone casino called Vegas World and how its equally bizarre owner captured the imagination of my two fabulous co-hosts, Matt and Dan. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Bert.
How are you doing?
Fantastic, fantastic. On today's episode, we're going to talk about some of the hilarious pranks you guys pulled at Vegas World and some of the ones you didn't. But first, I think it might be a good idea to dive a little deeper into who and what Bob Stupak and Vegas World really were, because, you know, I think you guys could probably talk about both subjects for hours, but not everybody in our audience is just quite as familiar with the subject. So tell us a little bit more about where Vegas World really was within the context of Las Vegas and what kind of personality Bob Stupak was.
So Bob Stupak was legitimately a guy who pulled himself up by the bootstraps and came from Pittsburgh and worked his way up. He had a restaurant and blackjack bar in downtown. He bought into a few downtown casinos and he just kept working his way up till he built the $1 million museum and casino, and then ultimately Vegas World, which was his, you know, coup de grace. And he built it. He was cheap. And he didn't have a lot of money and he still wanted to make a splash. So he didn't put it on, and he wanted to have his own thing. He didn't want to be a part of someone else's thing anymore. So he put it not on the Strip where it was expensive and not downtown where it was expensive, but somewhere in the dirty, dirty part of town in between. And it was on Las Vegas Boulevard, which is where the Strip is. But the Strip traditionally stops much farther south than where he put his casino. So what he did is he built the Bob Stupak's Vegas World, which it's always Bob Stupak's Vegas World.
Right.
It's never just Vegas World. It's always Bob's, because it is. It's nobody else wants it. Anyway, $1 million was a big deal to him. $1 million jackpot, $1 million Super Bowl bet. He was going to pay a guy $1 million to jump off of his tower when it opened. But then he charged the guy a $990,000 landing fee.
And he also, yes, right, he bet Donald Trump $1 million to play his own board game. So, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities between Trump and Stupak, except that Stupak really, you have to give him credit, was absolutely a self-made person. He was a self-made millionaire that you know, ended up, you know, parlaying all of his talents and craziness into his own casino and a viable business, at least for a while.
He always had a big smile on his face, and the imagery, like, you could see he was doing the American dream thing with all his might, like, believed in himself, positive thinking, you know, and whatever it came with it. There was an earnestness, and I think that's part of what made him a little bit mockable, his earnestness.
There was a vulnerability to it, like, that he had, you know, it was just so clear he wanted people to go, wow, Bob Stupak, you know, putting his name in 20-foot-tall letters on the building, putting it in the carpet, putting it on his face on the cards, putting a huge portrait of himself in his casino. I mean, he wanted to be wealthy, of course, but maybe more important than being wealthy was being respected to him, or being recognized as, like, a mogul, someone important. And, like, everything I've ever seen of him, like a history of him where he's provided photos, he makes sure that you see him with famous people. It's always like a glad handing opportunity. It's not like he was friends with Frank Sinatra or Frankie Avalon or Ronald Reagan, but he's more than happy to show you pictures. Hey, I was with this person. I'm right up there with them.
Yeah, I think that was his whole thing. Was, I think he would have much rather have been famous than rich, and known as a great gambler and a great, you know.
But I think you make really good points about him wanting to be respected. And he did a lot of, you know, he did a lot of crazy things, but he did some, you know, some really interesting things too, including running for mayor, which was not successful, but, you know.
Running for mayor, starting his own alternative newspaper in town because the local newspapers wouldn't cover him. So he started his own newspaper. And he was into the big grand gesture. So, like Trump, like, the bigger the better.
And speaking of Trump, from earlier, Trump came out at one point with his own board game. And so Stupak followed suit and came out with his own game, Stupak, the board game. And he bet Donald Trump $1 million to play it. And Donald, I think, refused that particular invitation.
But too scared.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Of course. How can you beat the world's greatest gambler in his own game?
He can't beat the Polish Maverick in his own game.
But we should point out, we also played Stupak the board game, and I think we were challenged to play for $8.
Who has it? Is it you that has it?
You've got it.
Bert, yeah. Nice. Okay. Good.
Yeah, and so I think we're going to play it on a later episode of the podcast.
It'll
so
be awesome.
Everybody can get a good sense
get
of
a sense
that
of how
game.
Good a game this is.
Exactly, yes.
And one of the other things about Stupak was that later on, after we had kind of established ourselves in Vegas, we made a short movie about two flamboyant magicians who are down on their luck who turn to fighting crime and solving mysteries. And we reached out to, actually, Bert, you were the director, and you reached out to Bob Stupak to get to
I
see
did
if
it.
He would perform appear in it. And what happened?
Yes. So, yeah, we were making this little short film, and we needed to cast someone as the mayor of Las Vegas. And who better than the man who ran for Las Vegas, mayor of Las Vegas, Bob Stupak. So somehow I don't even remember how, got a hold of him. This was late 90s at some point. And got him on the phone and talked to him for about 5 minutes, you know, and he was, you know, we were literally making this for, you know, $19 a day, pretty much, like the trip reports are. And he wanted $50,000 to appear as mayor of Las Vegas. That was not something we were able to do at the time. So we had to graciously decline. But I did actually get Bob on the phone and talk to him for a few minutes.
Wow.
And that the story of that film will also be another episode of the podcast a little bit later.
I'm jealous that you got to talk to him. You got to talk to him more than once, it sounds like.
Just the one time. Okay. I did see him another time in Las Vegas at the Peppermill, which I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with the Peppermill restaurant on the North Strip. One of my favorite restaurants still.
The world's greatest coffee shop. Truly.
Yes.
It's great.
Exactly. It's a little less great now because it's so popular. It's hard to get into these days. But I had lunch one time and Bob just happened to be having lunch there at the same time. And that was kind of thrilling at the time to see Bob Stupak at the next table. But I also remember any time I was around the North Strip or the Stratosphere area, we always used to go into White Cross Drugs, which was a little drugstore that had a lunch counter that was just north of the Stratosphere. Because legend has it was that Bob ate lunch there all the time. And so we would just, you know, wander in there if we happened to be in the neighborhood just to see if we could catch a glimpse of Bob. Never did, but his aura was always around for sure.
So I remember when we were doing Presto PI, our film, and we had thought, let's reach out to Bob Stupak. And I had kind of had a number in my head that if he would do it for that price, we would do him. And the top number I thought of was $1,200. So $50,000 was a lot. But can you imagine? Yeah. And $1,200 would have been that would have been outside
been a
our
lot
budget.
For us. Yeah. I know, totally.
But can you imagine if we'd have gotten to meet him there? Like, which of us would be the first one to have said to him, hey, Bob, do you remember that time you found that beef tongue?
So our listeners don't know about the beef tongue.
Let's get
into the beef tongue because that's one of the first pranks you guys ever did. And today we're going to be talking a lot about the pranks you guys did at Vegas World and in Las Vegas. Talk to us a little bit about that first prank. How did you come up with the ideas? Why did you come up with the idea to do pranks? It's just not a normal thing that most people go to Vegas to do. There's lots of things that people go to Vegas to do. Pulling pranks on the casino owners is not usually one of them. So did that come about? And
it not has usually been for us.
Yeah. So talk about the origin of that a little bit.
Yeah. We all met in, this was, it comes, it goes back to that. We all met in comedy club in at UC Irvine. That's where Matt and Mike and Phil and I met. So it was a stand-up comedy club. We did comedy on campus, you know, once a quarter, a couple times a year. And we would have meetings Wednesday nights where we would just make each other laugh and workshop material and do stuff. And so we were used to this kind of workshop attitude. Like I remember a bit that I had about the reserved parking all over the campus. There's always just reserved spots. And I was like, can I park there? Because I'm pretty reserved. I'm at least introverted. And then I tried it. I parked there and I got a ticket. And so I went to contest it on campus. And they said, well, you're contesting it, so you're not that reserved. So instead, I went on a diet so I could at least use the compact spaces. So I probably came into the meeting and said, I want to do a bit about parking. And then everyone else gave me the rest of the entire bit, right? Because I would do that, just show up with the one word. And so my thought is that we must have been in Vegas. And I think Matt, just given who Phil and Mike and I and Matt were at those times, he probably said, you said something like, let's thank Bob for all he's done for us. Let's see if we can think of a way to really say thank you. Of course, knowing we're working to see him in person, we started a workshop, the idea of what gift we could give to Bob Stupak.
We probably started with a thank you note and then workshopped it down beef tongue.
Do you think that's where we started?
No. We started out with mischief and we ended with mischief.
Yeah, exactly. And my guess is that I came up with the idea of the beef tongue just because it was something I grew up with. Yeah. You know, it was on the menu. And again, this goes back to cheapo in a way, because Jewish culture, you know, the Jews in New York and the tenements would eat beef tongue because it was cheap. It's kind of good. You know, good Mexican.
But we still don't know what you did with the beef tongue. What did you guys do?
Well, so basically, we decided to
the tongue of beef.
We decided to give Bob Stupak a beef tongue. So we went out to the Smith's Food King. This was one of the most expensive parts of that trip. It's not the beef tongue's that expensive, but it's like an 8-pound piece of meat. So yeah. we each put in like $4, I think, and bought this 8-pound beef tongue.
It was actually $11.03. I have a photo of me with the beef tongue.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's right. And you're sticking your tongue out at the beef tongue.
So yeah, it's huge. It's the size of a human head.
Yeah, it's a large, strange looking piece of meat. We were driving it back to Stupak's Vegas World, I think trying to figure out what to do with it. And I think what we kind of realized we couldn't leave it in the casino because of the security. But at the time, the elevator seemed like a good choice. So we got it in the casino, took off the cellophane, took off the little styrofoam bin, and basically just laid it on the floor of the elevator. And then, as I remember it, we put it there, ran out to the car, got on I-15 and drove for home. You know, so it was a real practical joke. Like, we actually did something, but the effects were all imaginary. Because for 4 hours back to LA, we were laughing about who found it. Was it a tourist? Was it what the hell is that thing? It's like, so the whole prank was just, I have to say that it was a rough gesture. Obviously, we didn't get to stick around and see it, but clearly we've never forgotten it.
No.
But I understand how just the concept of it amused you for hours beforehand and many hours afterwards.
Still,
without even knowing what the upside is. Yes, sure, sure.
We're easily amused. But that's there's true. A couple things. One is we put it in the elevator like on the third or fourth floor and then sent the elevator down to the casino. So the doors would open. Hopefully somebody would get on. There'd be this, 8-pound piece of meat just lying there. The other part of it, we got the heck out of town. We didn't even want to see what happened. We wanted to be as far away from this. And we actually checked the news, see if anyone reported it. You know, there's on the news that there's a beef tongue.
I was going to say, halfway home, we were like, do you think they can dust a beef tongue for fingerprints?
The other part was something I didn't know about a beef tongue is the taste buds are like suction cups. So once it hit the carpet in the elevator, it didn't budge. It was like glued to the floor.
I think probably what happened is that they picked it up, dusted it off, and served it at the Moon Rock Buffet. That's my guess.
Tonight's special.
It's like, I don't know what it is.
Do you think they dusted it off?
No, maybe
not. Maybe not.
It's beef tongue with elevator sauce.
So after that you probably just got hooked on it because it amused you to no end, right? And so on further trips, you just decided, what's the next goofy thing we're going to do?
We had more time to workshop after that. It's like, what's next? And I think the next one that you'll talk about, Matt, is I think is the pinnacle of what we did.
The fun books?
I think that was the best. I really do.
it's one of my favorites. I kind of like, we'll get to my favorite. And my favorite wasn't even successful, but it had the longest lasting impact.
This is true.
Before you get into that, can you just explain even what a fun book is? Because I feel like those even been phased out in modern day Las Vegas. And some people might not even know what a fun book is.
Do they no longer have fun books?
I don't think they do. I don't think they have visitor centers. But the town was surrounded.
How does everyone have any fun?
The fun book was basically a marketing tool by the casinos. As you drove into town, every highway into town had visitor centers. And in those visitor centers were fun books for all the casinos. And each one had to come to our casino. Like Fitzgerald would give you a $2 roll of nickels to come into Fitzgerald's. Vegas World had one where they'd give you $50 in free play. It was $20 in table play, $30 in slot play. But it got doled out to you in very small increments over 3 hours.
Right.
So you had to keep going back to the welcome center to get the next little $5 teaser. So you had to sit in Vegas World for 3 hours. We had the free rooms at this point, and we had lots of time on our hand because we weren't gambling. So we came up with, and this is Phil, Dan, Mike, me. There were a few other people that did this one too. Steve was on that trip. I can't even remember everyone. I think Gazal might have been on that trip.
I missed that trip, but I was helping plan it.
Yeah. And Mike had a scanner before most people had a scanner. So he had scanned like the Vegas World logo, and we had scanned Bob Stupak's picture, and we decided to create our own fun book. So it was just basically a small book of coupons for Vegas World. And we
were going to Bob Stupak's Vegas World.
We were going to mass produce these and put them at all the visitor centers so that when we went and got our free money at Vegas World while we stayed there, we could see people trying to redeem these coupons that we created.
Again, and, creating entertainment for ourselves. Right?
For ourselves, yes, absolutely. And so we created these fun books. I remember we took Dan's family, so Phil was on the trip because we took Dan's family's minivan, right, and we were cutting the pages and stapling them as we went. And so I have the fun book in front of me, and it's a rainbow colored, multicolored. There's about 7 or 8 coupons in here. We had been to Vegas World enough times on the scam by that point that we had hundreds of free tickets for the shows that we never used. So every fun book actually included a legitimate ticket for Alan and Rossi in it because we had so many. We had hundreds.
Do you want to read some of the other coupons in there?
Yes.
Yeah, what else was in there?
The first page was my personal guarantee. Each coupon in this booklet is valid for the items listed. With a big picture of Bob Stupak, you will receive exactly what is printed on each coupon and often more. There are no gimmicks. There are no tricks. Please read each coupon carefully to make the most of this booklet and know exactly what you're entitled to. Sincerely, and then Bob Stupak's signature, and next to him, his face. So
it's
the first one.
It's the meta coupon. It's the.
It's just to legitimize it.
Right.
The next one is a free $10 in slot play. On that coupon, we created a little slot machine, and the reels had all come up with Bob Stupak's face. So it was 3 Bob Stupaks, and you got free $10 in slot play. You just had to redeem it, and it was valid for all dollar carousels in regular slots specially set aside for valued customers like you and not people using real money. One was a free ice cream cone where the stars do shine with a picture of Bob Stupak with ice cream covering his face. And this one was good at the at the Bob Stupak's Vegas World sweet shop, which didn't exist.
Oh, that's right.
I was going to ask if there was actually a place to get ice cream in the casino.
No, okay. So. My favorite was the free space nachos. And that one had a picture of Bob Stupak wearing a sombrero sitting next to a big plate of nachos. And help us salute our friends from south of the border with this traditional Mexican delicacy.
Yeah, I'm realizing the Stupak art you did in that is kind of presaging the cheapo boy. And, you know,
yeah, that's true.
We'll get to that
casino
later.
Casino boy, yeah.
Casino boy.
So this is all pre-Photoshop, too. How did you guys put all this stuff together?
Mike had the scanner.
Mike had like this.
Yeah, I know, but you had to do all the artwork, and how'd you do all the layout and the doctored up photos of Bob? And
Cut it, the sombrero on his head, I just
so
drew.
Some of our audience may remember a time before digital that was called analog, where you actually had like exactos and pens and paper.
Yeah, we'll put
that's
these on
what
the
we
website.
Use, Sonny boy. Okay.
We'll put these on the website so you can see what they look like. They were pretty good for their time. Now you'd look at them and go like, that doesn't look like a real coupon, but the coupons back then weren't that great. And also
Stupak coupons weren't that great. So.
Yeah. This one has, it came with Vegas World special cheese with a Z topping. Free t-shirts for only $5. Another of my favorites is free Kino crayon. Present this coupon to any Keno runner to receive absolutely free a professional quality Keno Player's Crayon. A professional Keno Player's Crayon.
Professional quality.
Yeah. So well, and also, it's of a guaranteed quality and usable for Keno games at Vegas World.
Keno crayons, of course, are complimentary to any Keno parlor you go to in Las Vegas.
Yes. Yeah.
So these guys drove them down to the first they stopped at the visitor center at the California border, but you guys also made a trip south to the Arizona border to put some in that visitor center too.
And in the visitor center within the city, like on Las Vegas Boulevard. Yeah. So amazing. Like, you know, we went in and we were looking at the fun books that were there for all the other casinos. And we just dropped a bunch of these into the display bins at those different visitor centers.
So there were hundreds of them out there in circulation at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm actually a little surprised in hearing about the coupons that you didn't go a little bigger on them. Like you didn't. You give people $1,000 in free slot play or, you know, 10 times their bet on blackjack or something like that. Was there any talk about really putting the screws to the casino with these valid, you know, guaranteed coupons?
I think we wanted to make them believable enough that the casino employees would go, well, I guess it's real.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and believable enough, you know, next to the other fun books in the visitor centers as well. So I think that was the plan. And so that trip that weekend, we did see very confused people working the welcome center in Bob Supak's Vegas World and very confused customers holding these fun books and trying to get them redeemed. We didn't stick around long enough to watch for too long. You know, we still felt like, you know, maybe they're going to figure it out, but who did this? But it worked. It made for a very fun weekend. It probably made us stick around Vegas World more than we normally would, so we could watch at a distance and see how it went.
Totally.
Well, that was definitely not the last prank you guys would pull at Vegas World. So we're going to be back after a short break to talk about maybe your most memorable prank and one that had a lasting legacy at Bob Stupak's Vegas World. We'll be right back in just a second.
Take it to the max.
Come on and let yourself go.
Take it to the max.
It's time that you should know.
Take it to the max.
When it's time to party at the Maxim Hotel and Casino.
Classic cars, race cars, muscle cars, and more. Dream cars, the cars of the stars, cars that made automotive history. They're all here in the Auto Collections at the Imperial Palace, the world's largest and finest classic car showroom. Buy, sell, trade, or just enjoy the styles and stories of these vintage automobiles. Located on the fifth floor of the parking facility, open daily. There's always something new to see in the Auto Collections, Center Strip at the Imperial Palace.
Thanks for coming back to the Neon Gutter. We've been talking some more with Dan and Matt about Bob Stupak's Vegas World and Bob Stupak, and more specifically, the pranks that they entertained themselves with while they were visiting the hotel. So before we get into maybe your biggest caper, there's another one that involves some yellow caution tape. Can you talk about that a little bit, Dan?
Yeah, I think this was Phil's idea. It was very simple to pull off. Basically, we took a roll of caution tape, do not cross, and went to different floors in the hotel tower and put caution tape over different elevators on different floors. So it was like an elevator number 2 on the 3rd floor, elevator number 4 on the 5th floor. So basically you could get into an elevator, head up to your room, and suddenly find yourself standing behind caution tape that said, do not cross. And so this was more of a prank on the guests than on Bob Stupak.
Didn't they have enough to deal with just by the fact that they were staying at Bob Stupak's Vegas World?
Yeah, I think that the patients were like, oh, God, what now? Who died on the floor now?
Right.
Again, like with a lot of these pranks, did you ever see some of the people get off the elevator or try and get on? Or
I wish, yeah. We were both shaking our heads. I wish we'd seen that.
Yeah. We were pretty scared.
pretty
scared to get too close to our own production,
which is silly now because I think you know, security cameras have gotten a lot more prevalent than they were back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, we weren't just going to sit in the lobby and eat popcorn and watch. So.
And part of it too was it was more fun to imagine what would happen than, and to imagine that it went fabulously than to see that maybe it didn't go that great or it wasn't that big a dramatic thing. We could imagine a fantastic outcome in our mind.
This is a good point. Also, sure, I think Matt, sure, you pointed out that you were kind of a ringleader in some ways, but risk averse. Like the rest, some of us were a little bit more.
You and Phil were absolutely willing to put yourselves out there more. I was really good at coming up with dangerous things, and I'm less afraid of putting myself in harm's way, but you guys were much braver about putting yourself out in the public eye and potentially embarrassing yourselves, which paid off.
I think, Matt, part of your personality to this day is coming up with embarrassing things to do and goading other people into doing them instead of yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, why not?
That's right. Like, see if you can eat three burger baskets with all the fries.
Okay. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point.
I'm sure we'll get to
poor
it.
Poor Robert.
Now, maybe your most memorable prank that you guys pulled didn't quite go off the way you thought it might, but it still had like a amazing legacy at Vegas World. So tell us a little bit about that.
It had the biggest production value and the most engineering involved, but... Yeah,
that's what I was going to say, too. It's an engineer. Like, Matt was going to school for civil engineering. Mike was in mechanical engineering.
Electrical,
that's right. Phil was in computer science. I was in writing, so I didn't have a lot to do with this one. I think it was Phil's idea. But I love the fun books because it was our art and writing, but this one was the engineering. So the idea is we get up to the hotel room and we've got Knox gelatin, clear Knox gelatin. And the idea is to dissolve it in hot water. And I thought we used the in-room coffee maker, but Phil says no, it was actually just the hottest water we could get out of the tap. So we dissolve Knox gelatin in hot water and put that in Ziploc bags. And then we get ice from the ice machine and put that in other Ziploc bags. And I remember Phil being the trench coat man. So he had on one side of his body, he had several Ziploc bags full of hot liquid Knox gelatin liquid. And then the other side of his body, a bunch of baggies of ice cold water. Okay, so we go, the operative team goes down to the casino and pass what we like to call the diarrhea bar, which was a small bar in the casino where there was a men's room.
Diarrhea.
That's why we called it the diarrhea bar. Exactly. And I guess coincidentally or not coincidentally, there was a men's room right behind the diarrhea bar. But the idea is you pour the hot gelatin into the toilet bowl. Now Knox gelatin is clear. So you put this clear gelatin in the toilet bowl. Then you put in the cold water in the toilet bowl with the idea of it cooling the gelatin as quickly as possible. And you can imagine the result. The ideal result is that you get a clear liquid as usual, just sitting in the toilet, except it's not liquid, it's gelatin. So this one we refer to as the bouncy turds prank. So it's just, so anything that happens on top of it just sort of sits on top, right? So now to make sure it hardens, this was the genius part. Mike, who had the scanner, took a piece of Bob's Tupac's stationery and found a font. I think it was Quicksilver. I should ask Phil to be sure. He's our font expert. But wrote a big sign in kind of a space age font that said, out of order. We're sorry, out of order. On the Bob Stupak's letterhead and made a bunch of copies of it in color. And we put those on each of the stalls so that nobody would go in there until the gelatin had time to harden and set up. And so the idea is we'd hang out in the casino an hour, then take the signs down and then maybe do what we usually did, which was get out of town and then come back much later in the evening and to see what had happened. So this was what we did. We put the signs up, left. I think right before we left, Phil says he went into the bathroom to check on it and saw one of the custodians with a sign in his hand, kind of looking quizzically at it, like, where did this come from? Like, this, what is this sign doing here? So now at some point while we were out doing other stuff, somebody flushed all three of the toilets. Like, we got back and there was just water in the toilets and they were running. So we like, okay, another prank gone awry. So we went to bed. But the next morning when we got up, all the signs were back up. So the gelatin basically hardened somewhere down in the plumbing. Like, we basically took all three of those toilets out of commission. It didn't gel in the bowl, but those were no longer operative toilets for that trip.
The turds didn't bounce. And in fact, we actually, there's a little more engineering to it in that we had chosen a very late time, like 2 a.m., because we wanted the casino to be fairly dead. We wanted the bathroom to be fairly dead. And we went down and scoped it out a couple times. And it was the most alarming thing. Every time we went, there was like a janitor in the bathroom. It's like, this is the only place in Vegas world where somebody's cleaning. And there's like always a guy in there. So it took us a while till we could get in there and like dump this stuff. And it was Phil and me. And I can't remember who else, but I can't remember what time of year it was, but I had a huge heavy jacket on so I could smuggle in this gelatin and this ice and dump it in the toilets. It didn't work the way we wanted it to, but it did give us our...
We did damage on the order of at least three bottles of Drano, I think, is what happened. So we go home. That didn't really work. The next trip out to Vegas, months later, you know, and we have to remember, this is a time where Vegas World is just falling apart. Bob Stupak is putting every dime into building a Stratosphere Tower, and things are really going to hell. Like, we come back 2 months later, and the Vegas World out of order sign that Mike made has been copied dozens of times in black and white and is now on the toilets, on the slot machines, it's on stools, it's on, you know, anything could possibly be out of order. We cost them three bottles of Drano, but they got Mike's design skills for free. You know, and those signs lasted pretty much until Vegas World closed.
So they just took one of your signs off the stall and threw it on a Xerox machine and made hundreds of copies and used it everywhere.
And they needed hundreds of copies because before that, out of order was written on a paper towel with a ballpoint pen and just stuck on machines. So you just see like a brown piece of, you know, cheap paper towel with out of order written on it, taped to a slot machine or taped to whatever was out of order. And like Dan said, at that time, more and more stuff was out of order.
So at least they had official out of order signs thanks to us.
It was perhaps one of the most gratifying and giddying things in my life was seeing our signs. Like, holy shit, that's ours.
I totally remember the feeling. Like, we were just laughing. We were just so overcome with glee. That's our sign. Bob Stupak noticed us. The Stupak organization knows who we are. We've contributed.
So before we go on, I just have to ask, both of you guys have kids. Do your kids know anything about these pranks that you did? They certainly know a little bit about your trips to Las Vegas, but do they know about the pranks and have they gotten into that at all themselves?
Yes. My son is in college now. He, he decidedly doesn't think I'm cool, but he and his friends are all aware of the beef tongue and the out of order signs, and that they think is cool. He disassociates from me, assumes it was my friends that came up with it, but they talk about it, and every now and then he'll just say beef tongue.
Nice. Yeah, my daughter has looked at me with some disbelief, like, you really did that? But yeah. And then like Matt's kid, she has her own life to live. So
she knows your brother Phil too, so which is her uncle. So, you know, she has to say, "Oh, I can see how that might have happened."
So and here's an example of where we're at. We kind of fact checked with our friends. You guys remember what we were doing? Do you remember this? Who played what role in this? And we were just trying to fact check it. And everyone chimed up and said, I was there, I did this, I was there, I did that. And then we started going, yeah, too bad it didn't work. But we're all still friends. We all still go to Vegas together. And everyone's up for doing it again.
Yep.
We're like, can we pull that off? Do you think we can pull that off? And then the challenge is, but who deserves it? We couldn't think of who deserves it now. There's no Bob Stupak.
All right. Now, you guys also certainly must have brainstormed a bunch of stuff when you're workshopping these ideas on a bunch of hilarious pranks that you just never pulled off. Do you have any memorable ones of those that you wish you had done, or maybe it's just even funnier that you just came up with the idea for it?
Yeah, there were several that we actually workshopped, and some of them we even actually tested out the logistics of. One was if you put dry ice and dish soap in a bucket, just a little bit of dish soap in a bucket, it'll create a massive amount of foam. And we thought about filling the elevators with foam and then sending them down to the casino so the doors would open and this wall of foam would just come out or people wouldn't be able to get on. But we chickened out because we thought we might damage the electronics in the elevator with that. So that one we chickened out of.
Speaking of chickened out, that was kind of mock two of the beef tongue, is saying, look, what if we just took two live chickens and let them loose in the casino? It felt like this is where Yakety Sax comes in. You just have two chickens running around the casino. But I think it was like the cruelty to the animals. Plus, it felt like it'd be very hard to do this without witnesses. Like somebody trying to sneak live chickens into a casino.
It seemed hard to sneak live chickens quietly into your room in a suitcase.
And I think they're expensive too.
Yeah, that was the other part of it.
Yeah, they probably cost more than $4 to get. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, where do we pick them up? Do we pick them up in California and then drive them with us? You know, and then Dan had one where we were going to buy, like, you could buy these, like, I don't know what you call it, but it's ladybug eggs. And they're like these blocks of frozen ladybug eggs. And
I'm pretty sure it's for fly fisher people that they can make swarms. Ladybugs, gnats. You basically have a little ice cube of frozen larva.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we were going to plant those like just discreetly, you know, slip them in between slot machines, duct tape to the bottom of blackjack tables, just and kind of all over the casino. So after a couple of days, all of a sudden there's, you know, hundreds of thousands, and it would be hundreds of thousands of ladybugs just swarming throughout the casino.
Oh, man.
And I realized the best place would have been, so Stupak had these infinity wells, this little circular well where you look down and it's mirrored and you look up and it's mirrored. So it looks like you're in space staring. Just drop a couple of those ladybug eggs down into one of those. So it's basically this well of gnats or whatever coming out.
Well, I can tell you guys from personal experience, I used to live in a very rural area, and in the fall when the crops would get harvested, swarms of ladybugs would come out of the crops, and our house was right there. And so on the sun side of the house where it was warm, they would just attach themselves to the front of the house. So if you came in the house, they would all fly in, and the first time this happened, we didn't know what we were doing. And we opened the door and all these ladybugs came in, and it took weeks to get rid of them.
Oh,
and I can confidently say if you guys had pulled that off, it would have taken weeks or months to get rid of those ladybugs in the casino.
And I think the ladybugs would have liked it. They would have been like, wow, we're in space.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
This is cool.
Absolutely.
Can you dust ladybugs for fingerprints?
That one, they might attract us on the cameras.
Oh, yeah, because it's in the casino.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
That was probably part of our consideration on that one.
Yeah, we're goofy, but we're not that brave. We want to get away with it.
I was brave enough to challenge these guys to do it. They weren't brave to follow up.
We need to take one more short break, guys. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Vegas World, Stupak, and one prank designed to take place on the roof of the hotel. We'll be right back. We're back in the neon gutter. Now, I think, guys, there's one more sky-high prank we haven't talked about yet. Give us some details.
So another one that we never pulled off, and it was because we were afraid of doing permanent damage, was Vegas World had a pool on its rooftop when he built his big tower, not the Stratosphere Tower, but when he built his hotel tower, he put a pool on the roof, which was, I think, the only other place in town that had that was Binion's. And that was kind of a cool thing. But putting it that high in the air creates a lot of gravitational pull or potential energy. And so we thought, you know, if we go up there in the middle of the night when nobody's swimming, stick a hose in the pool, suck the water through and drop it off the side of the building, by morning the pool's going to be drained. We could siphon that whole pool overnight. And the people in the hotel rooms beneath it are like, oh, gee, it must be raining outside. You know? And so we thought that would be pretty great, is if we could siphon off that pool. And I think physically we could have pulled it off, but we chickened out for fear that we would damage the motors, the pumps for the pool. I don't think there were cameras up there. That wasn't even a consideration. That wasn't a big deal at the time, but that would have been a classic had we siphoned off the pool. But we did chicken out on that one as well.
Oh, it's a classic that we talked about it.
Yeah.
But that was sort of a theme for you guys. You never really wanted to like do permanent damage to a facility or harm people or anything.
I'm glad you
wanted
said
to make
that.
Things as harmless as possible.
Yeah, we were jackasses, but I mean, I think the whole purpose of our humor was not to harm anyone, least of all ourselves, and not to make anyone feel bad about themselves. You know, it was just, yeah, we were entertaining ourselves.
And thanking Bob Stupak.
And thanking Bob for all. And trolling Bob Stupak, because when you set yourself up, when you set yourself up the way Bob Stupak set himself up, you're going to get the trolls.
It felt so much more personal than like doing it to a casino that was run by a huge corporation.
Dude, you called us in the first episode the early internet influencers. I think you need to call us early internet trolls.
Much more appropriate. I think that's much more appropriate. Well, as you might imagine, the pranks didn't stop for these guys back in the 80s and 90s. They've been pranking each other during trips to Vegas for many years since, incorporating everything from high finance, croaking frogs, wrestling masks, impromptu accordion performances, and even just a little touch of Four Loko. But for more of these stories, you're going to have to join us next time down here in the Neon Gutter. Hope to see you then. Thanks.
Dice against the cash won't last. Through
the Neon Gutter is a Big Empire production. Randy Shandis, executive producer. Our incredible theme music is courtesy of Rosin Coven. Do you have something to say? Call our voicemail line at 775-400-2941. And for more episodes, vintage photographs and video, contact info, and those amazing trip reports, visit us at neongutter.com.
Vegas Haiku number 2. The elevator opens on a slab of meat. What the hell is that?